My family spent 20 years on the run, fleeing from threats I still struggle to fully comprehend.
There's people out there that want to do us harm.
We got a phone call saying that your father's thugs were coming to break my legs.
Run, Hide, Repeat, the unbelievable true story of a fugitive family and the unimaginable truth of what we were running from. Available now on CBC Listen and everywhere you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
It's been really funny because for these past 2 weeks, you know, I was just worried about like my happiness, sort of like having that crash.
Yeah.
But I've noticed that I'm blasé again. And I'm having this disconnect, like where my my body and my mind are very much like just shut it off and go. And I have this internal conflict right now to be like, no, don't shut it off and go, because that's what you've always been doing.
Wow.
And look where it's gotten you.
Okay.
Versus like feel the feelings, go through it, let yourself be sad. And I'm also finding myself just like crying at random times too. But I'm just like, just cry.
Yeah.
I'm Hillary McBride, and this is Other People's Problems. This is a real life therapy session between me and one of my clients we're calling Emily. She's fun and playful, smart and determined, and so loyal. Like, you would want this lady as a friend and you would never let her go. She's a mom with young kids and has a really chaotic childhood with trauma. Emily wasn't allowed to cry or show emotion growing up. And when we do this enough, it's almost like we rewire our brain to take this off ramp. Whenever we're feeling that experience of sadness coming up, we learn to get out of it quickly to protect ourselves, especially if staying with it would have cost us something. Sometimes the places that we go when we're trying to get away from sadness end up cutting us off from ourselves. So learning to feel again after not feeling is really hard in one sense because it's rewiring our inner landscape, but it's also the most natural thing in the world. So sometimes when we're doing this, people have this kind of push-pull going on inside them where there are little bits of relief. They're doing it because it feels good and they know it's going to take them somewhere good. And it feels a little clunky and awkward at first.
Before the last session, everything was very easy for me. Like, but now I'm back into like, okay, just like, I have to keep on reminding myself, like, baby steps, chunk it out,
okay.
Like, go for a 10-minute walk, just do this. Now you have to, like, clean the kitchen, but it's okay, just put away a pot, just put away one pot,
okay.
And I have to, like, constantly do that right now.
Okay.
So.
Can I clarify with that?
Yeah.
Did your mood shift back into some of the space that it was right before Christmas, like the December dark space, or was it more like you're trying to go underneath what's happening and you're noticing there is stuff there?
Yeah, I'm trying to, like, it's definitely not the same as when it was December and I just, like, couldn't even put on pants, right?
Yeah.
It's definitely way easier, but at the same time, yeah, I think I'm like, ugh. Like, I feel like there's just, like, a big kind of rock, right?
Ooh, it's heavy.
It's heavy.
Okay. Tell me more about the rock. What's the rock? Where did it come from? I mean, just kind of, can you flesh that out a bit?
I think it just came from like understanding that I just don't let myself be sad. It just feels like I'm in conflict, and that's where I think the rock is coming from. It's just like heavy because I always try to push through stuff, right?
So speaking of pushing through, sometimes we even do that right now as we're talking about it. So can you notice what's surfacing for you, what that emotion is?
It's just like sadness.
Is it the sadness right here in the room with us right now?
Yeah.
Can you tell me what tells you that you're sad? How do you know you're sad?
I just like feel it in my heart.
Okay, so can we... Is there more?
No, and just like, and then it wells up, right?
Okay. Can we pay attention to your heart? I want you to see if you can go inside in your mind and just stay with whatever sensation is there in your chest.
Emotions are physiological processes. They're not just the ideas or the words that we give them. Structurally, feeling happens in more of the mid part of the brain, which means that it's lower in a sense than the thinking parts. Anything that's lower in our brain structure has been part of our evolutionary development, and it's been around longer than the things that are higher and more newly evolved. So these midbrain or lower structures tend to take over faster when something's going on. They pull resources away from the parts of our brain that are higher, like thinking parts. So we're doing all this thinking, but it's actually deeply impacted by emotion. And until the emotion is actually attended to and dealt with and felt, we won't be able to think as clearly.
Oh, there was a nice big breath there. Yeah. Can you tell me what's happening inside?
It's slowly, the pain's getting less.
Wow.
It's just not as, doesn't seem so immediate and anxious.
Yeah. Yeah, there was an acuity to it, just like a pressure, urgency.
Yeah.
And then that was coming up in tears. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's definitely releasing.
Okay. So that's just something to pay attention to.
Yeah.
Right? It was there. It was coming up, right? In a way you were talking about it, but also kind of forcing through the feeling.
Yeah.
And we just went back into this area, stayed with it.
Yeah.
And something settled.
Yeah.
The fear for a lot of us is if I feel the sadness, if I stay with it, like it will go on forever.
Yeah.
And just, this is a good example of the fact that it doesn't.
Yeah.
Right? Even in these little ways, we can get a break from it.
Yeah.
When the sadness was really coming up, one of the things that you were saying was you haven't allowed yourself to be with it.
Like it's for a certain time period. So it's like, okay, let yourself be sad. And then it's like, no, cut it off and then move on. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of, I don't know if I was taught that. It was just like kind of where me and my sister are the exact same, right? So me and her are like, okay, this has happened. This is shitty. This is sad.
Yeah.
Let's just move on.
Okay.
And then we just kind of don't talk about it anymore.
Oh.
It's just kind of like, that happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Okay. So let's just take that little piece, that little dynamic of something comes up and then it's shitty, let's not talk about it. How has that helped you?
It hasn't.
Let's back up. Yes, you're right. Maybe it's like, it's been also problematic.
Yeah.
But generally, my working assumption is that we're wired to survive. So if something feels too overwhelming and we don't know how to feel it.
Yeah, we just shut down.
Yeah. So if, could you name what it has given you to not have to feel sadness or how it's helped you in some ways?
It's like a security blanket,
sure.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, so creates security, creates maybe some control.
Yeah.
Maybe even feels like resilience. Like, look like that. That sadness can keep me down.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, pat on the back.
Yeah.
Look at how tough we are, sort of thing.
Totally.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. And it sounds like on the flip side, you're realizing or are aware of how it's also hurt you.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about that?
It's just not like nothing's ever resolved that way, right?
Yeah.
So you just have a lot of open wounds that you're just kind of like doing a shitty sewing job and then being like, okay, go ahead, right? Like that's where it kind of feels like.
Yeah. That looks painful as you say that.
Yeah.
When a feeling comes up, sometimes we're able to touch it a little bit. But in order for it to feel like it's moved through us, we need to feel it to completion. And what Emily's describing here is that when she would feel, she would be able to touch the sadness just a little bit, but never to the point where it felt like it moved all of the way through her, where she would get a release or a sense of knowing on the other side, oh, I can actually sink into this moment because I'm safe and I'm okay. We need to learn how to feel in social connection. And when our experiences are invalidated, often because other people don't know how to be with their emotions, and so they won't know how to help us stay with ours, the message we take away is that there's something wrong with us. There was something about us that was too much. And this all shapes how we feel about ourselves and how we learn to let ourselves stay with emotion in the future or let other people in close to our pain.
Is your mind going somewhere?
Just like my childhood and stuff like that. But then even my sister, I don't know if I told you this, my sister almost died like a really long time ago. Like it's over and stuff, but we don't talk about it.
Ooh, that and looks really painful.
Yeah.
Can you just slow down for a moment and be with that?
Lost her baby too, and we don't really talk about it either, and it's awful. It's an so awful, shitty thing that happened to her. And we just kind of are like, yeah, that happened.
It sounds like it would have been so scary to almost lose her. Like maybe even intolerable.
Yeah. Like I just couldn't even remember flying back and getting on the phone with my other sister and saying, and she's like, she's in the ICU, and I was just like, she can't, like I couldn't even let myself go there. I'm like, she's not gonna die.
Yeah. You were working so hard to kind of hold hope and not get into the possibility of what it would be like to lose her.
Yeah. Like it's just awful.
Awful, yeah. Yeah, you didn't have to lose her for it to be, it sounds like, a horrific situation.
We have this tendency to compare our suffering to other people, or even to ourselves, thinking about what's happening in the present as it relates to or stacks up against another likely worse experience. And we call this comparative suffering. We learn that somebody else has it worse, and so our experience doesn't matter. And in some ways, we use that as a strategy to help us. We use that as a way to say, okay, if somebody has it worse, then actually this must be survivable. But the other way that we compare suffering is we say, nobody has had it worse. This is actually the worst experience, and nobody could ever understand what I'm going through. And that has a function too. In some ways, it's us trying to elicit this empathic response from other people where we are getting the care that we think that we need. But ultimately, when we do that, we're actually cutting ourselves off from the human experience as well. If no one else has ever felt this, or if this is the worst, then how could we possibly get through it? The antidote to this is to ask ourselves the question, how am I like other people in my pain? How is there actually something that I'm going through right now that is connecting me to the broader human experience? Other people know what it's like to wonder what's going to happen next or to be afraid. But I think there's another piece of this, which is that it's hard for us to hold two things at the same time. I'm feeling lonely, and I'm also so grateful I have my job. I am so glad my sister didn't die, and I'm so afraid. That feeling of not knowing was so scary, and that fear still lives in me right now.
Even though you didn't lose her, if the way we're qualifying a tragedy is if someone lived or died, we're not acknowledging how scary that was, how painful it was for you and your family, for her. What was that like for you, that whole chunk of time?
When I'm in it, I don't think, like, it's just, I go into, like, okay, what needs to happen mode. Like, I don't actually let myself process. And then I flew home to Calgary, and it was just kind of like, I cried a little bit, and then you just kind of get on with your life. I don't know, I guess it wasn't horrible because I didn't let myself feel.
Wow. this thing in you of like kind of lock down the feelings, just kind of put the next foot in front of me.
Yeah.
Was a strategy in some ways that probably helped you.
Yeah.
Not go into grief before you needed to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. If you could go back in time and talk to that version of you that was on the plane flying home, like everything locked down, what would the today you say to her?
I would just give her a hug.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And just say it's okay.
It's okay.
Yeah. And you can cry and you can, it's shitty. It's a shitty situation.
Yeah.
But you will get through it no matter what.
Yeah, you'll be okay.
You'll be okay.
Regardless of the circumstances.
Yeah.
Wow. It sounds like you would have also given yourself permission to be with that fear and that sadness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. If you were to envision the weight in your chest, how would you see it? Answer that any way that feels like it just comes to you.
Yeah, I don't know, just like a sinking rock almost.
Sinking rock.
Yeah.
Okay. And what does a sinking rock need?
It needs to be lifted up.
Lifted up. Okay. Who's most suitable to lift?
Myself.
Okay. That wasn't a trick question.
No.
Okay, but yourself. Okay.
No, it's just because it needs to... Not like this is going to sound a little martyry, but like I feel like I need to do this for myself. Like I need to figure out how to make myself happy, because at the end of the day, it's me, and like ultimately I'm responsible for me.
Right.
So
you said martyr, but I like responsibility just a little bit better. Right. That there's a sense of maybe taking ownership of your life and being in connection with yourself.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's imagine there's a part of you that is this sinking rock, and there's another part of you that can lift that up. What part of you can, and maybe could we change that instead of like lifting it up to think about like just holding or being with it at first?
Yeah.
Because we don't want to get into the same pattern of like, make it go away, right?
Yeah,
so being with. Tell me about the part of you that is most equipped to hold that sadness?
Definitely, I would say the mother part could hold this. Mm-hmm. But then at the same time, I'm like, I'm very tired sometimes of being a mom.
Oh, I'm tired of being a mom. Okay.
So, but it's just more giving myself that love that I give my kids instead. Mm-hmm. Right?
That's right.
The literature shows us that parents see kids often as an extension of themselves, psychically. There's also almost an existential quality to it, that when you get to see a human being from the beginning, to see their worth, to love them unconditionally, it gives us this kind of weird insight that maybe that could be true for us too. That this human being who was born into the world who did nothing, had no accomplishments, didn't have any possessions, didn't achieve anything, that they were loved and valuable, can teach us something about our lives too.
What if someone you love asks you to help them die? What would you say? This is the powerful question at the heart of The Ultimate Choice. The series follows the journey of Michael and his wife Anne as they grapple with his request to choose the way he wants to die. I'm Rob Cribb, and through their story, I learned a lot about my own family. I hope the show is a way to start conversations many of us want to have, but rarely do. The Ultimate Choice is out now.
Okay, so I want to do something imaginary for a moment. I want you to see that part of you, especially from when your sister was really sick.
Yeah.
The part of you that was so sad and so scared, but had it all kind of locked down.
Yeah.
And then the part of you that is loving and present. I just want you to see the two of them interact for a moment.
Just let the scared be hugged and cry.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. What's happening right now?
It's nice.
Yeah. What is this feeling called that you're having in this moment? And maybe it's a couple.
Yeah. It's definitely the release.
Yes, release.
But also, like, just love and compassion. Wow. And not as scared.
And so the image of the sinking rock, can you envision the sadness, the sinking part?
Yeah.
With this loving, supportive, caring part around it?
Yeah. There's still a little bit of pressure in my heart, but definitely not as much.
Yeah. Okay. Let's pay attention to that pressure for a moment. Without trying to change it, just noticing it. And can you say to it in your mind, thank you for telling me I needed to pay attention to this? And can you say to it in your mind, I know you've been there for a while. I'm so sorry I haven't listened. I'm listening now.
I definitely, like, conflicted. Like, I'm sad that I haven't paid attention to it in so long. But at the same time, it's kind of like, better late than never.
Yeah. What's sad for you about knowing you haven't paid attention to?
Because it's just been there for so long.
Yeah.
So long. I just haven't given myself the love that I need.
Yeah.
And give it to everyone else.
Wow.
I just need to start loving myself more.
And I think you're starting, right?
Yeah.
But sometimes when we think about loving ourselves or being in a loving relationship with ourselves, we see it down the line, like what it'll look like in 10 years of practicing this.
Yeah.
And we forget that we get there by these small, the little choices we make to notice our pain and go, oh,
yeah.
What are you telling me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if we back this way up, we can say that, yes, sometimes change happens in an instant, but most of the time change in any area of our life, especially in therapy, is slow and then all of a sudden fast. It's like we put all this work in, we do all these little things day after day, or hour in therapy after hour in therapy, and then all of a sudden it's like, whoa, there's this fruit on the tree that I've been watering the whole time. So we can ask ourselves, how am I watering this tree? What tree am I watering? What am I using to water it? And we forget how those little moments that are almost invisible really add up to build this beautiful thing that we carry around inside of ourselves. That's been huge in my personal life. And I like to think about it too with how much my clients help me with that. I've practiced saying kind things to people in pain for so long that they're just more available to me.
Like, I've been thinking about it, and not like in a weird robot way, but it's just like sometimes, like, I had a bad sleep. I woke up and I was pretty grumpy and I was like agitated and I was like, I just wish I could, wish I could just be like, yeah, I had a shitty sleep. Get over it, right? Not get over it, but, you know, like, not have it affect my emotions so much. But I think that has to do with just the fact that I haven't tended to my emotions. And so they're all just like here and then.
Right. Or so. With all that stuff locked inside.
Yeah.
When the mechanism, the shutdown mechanism, which usually gets like weakened when we're underslept.
Yeah.
When that is somehow permeable in a way, like all the stuff that's been bottled up is just
right at the surface. Yeah. Yeah.
So could we be compassionate to yourself about your grumpiness this morning too? Right? Like, of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
My favorite thing to teach people to do when they're learning to be with their inner process is first, no matter what, say to themselves, of course, Because there's almost always a reason. Right? Almost always. You're feeling reactive? Of course. You've been underslept. You're feeling like you were depressed? Of course. There was too much to carry and you were never shown how. You're thinking about your sister and almost losing her and you're sad now? Of course. You love her so much. It would have been so sad for her to go. All of it makes sense. So even in this moment, right, I'm noticing your tenderness.
Of course.
Yeah, this is all so new.
Yeah.
And there's so much there.
So much there, yes.
Yeah. When we start the process of learning to feel, right, there's often some things we need to go back. And make some space for. Because those were... they were significant and kind of unprocessed in a way. And I'm curious, I mean, we just started a little bit today with naming a few things about that. Can you think of some big things? Let me take back the word big. Can we think of some things that needed to have some space that got shoved down?
I think... just in terms of how I grew up and,
Emily has a history of childhood trauma. And so while Emily and I have talked about her childhood trauma, we're at the point in our work where it's likely appropriate to go back and re-experience some things, but re-experience them in the way that her nervous system knows that they're over and that things are different now. Emily also has had a history of struggling with her mental health postpartum. And because she has had a baby not so long ago, that was a big part of why she actually came back into therapy, is because she'd been working really, really, really hard to hold everything together. And then it seemed like all of the things that she was doing to hold it together just started to crumble. And so we've got this past history of trauma, but then there's also these more recent experiences where things have felt really demanding and hard.
And just all the stuff that happened with my mom, like that's a lot of unprocessed stuff. And I think I understand, like I don't blame her for any of this. I know she needs help, I know. And it's crazy to think that there wasn't help for her at that time.
She was so alone.
She was so alone. And that also kind of like, because you can see like now going through it and being a mom of two, like I couldn't even imagine being by yourself, four kids, not understanding what postpartum was. And so, like, there's a part of me that, like, mentally I understand all this stuff, but it's still shitty.
That's right. And it can be both. There's so much pain there. Can we just stay with this for a moment? I'm so sorry. What's happening in your body right now with all of these tears?
It's just, like, chest is again
chest, like. If we could put a microphone in your chest, what would your chest be saying right now with all of that tightness and tension and pressure?
It would just be like, let me out.
too much pressure let me out.
Like a tea kettle right now, just whistling like crazy.
Can you put your hand on your chest? And I just want you to experience yourself as being with yourself while you're feeling all of that pain. We're just going to add one more layer. I want you to remember that I'm right here with you, that you are with your pain, but you are so not alone. Can you tell me what that's like for you?
For some reason, like just feeling safe.
Wow.
Keeps on popping up.
Great. Let's stay with feeling safe for a moment. In the same way we were staying with the pain, we want to stay with the safe. What's coming up there?
A sense of calm.
Yeah, okay.
Like a warm hug.
Ooh, a warm hug. Okay, yeah. We're going to try and add another layer. When you're ready, but only when you're ready, I want you to open your eyes and meet my gaze. Just take this in for a moment. That all of this feeling isn't happening on your own. It's happening with someone, but not only someone, me, right? Yeah. And what's that like, just to bring me in a more explicit way into this with you?
It's good. It's you're kind of the only person that it's been like this. So it's good.
Okay. You said good, and then it looked like it's there was another little piece of something. Can you tell me what was just there?
It's just. I always think of myself as a vulnerable person, but like, I guess I'm not as vulnerable as I think, just because I don't share this with anyone else, right? So.
Yeah. This stuff is extra tender, and
so
that you were talking about us and me, and then you started talking about your vulnerability. What's it like to do that vulnerability with me, to let me into that?
I think it's like, just because of our relationship, there was very easy, but it's not easy for other people, right?
Okay, so it feels easy here, but you're noticing the contrast.
Yeah.
I feel so moved. Thank you for sharing that with me. It is not lost on me that going to some of these places and learning to feel and being with yourself is super duper risky and vulnerable.
Yes.
I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of us. Look at us go.
Yeah.
What happens for you when I tell you that I'm proud of you and us? What's that like?
It feels good.
It's, that goes in?
Yeah, definitely.
Yes.
Yeah, good.
Uh-huh.
It's not easy doing any of this stuff. And
that's right.
It's so funny because it's like tapping into that on a present level is actually quite difficult.
Right.
Yeah. To do. So.
Yeah. And did you notice how body focused we were today?
Yeah.
Yeah, so really right here and right now, like a little bit of story and then what's happening. Tell me a little bit about that, what's happening.
Yeah. Right?
What we're missing, most of us, when we're learning how to feel is like we're thinking about things.
Yes.
Without actually
feeling. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, or understanding why you're feeling the way that you're feeling, right? So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Feeling sad, being with our experience in connection with someone who is attuned can help us experience that emotion as being more bearable, and it can undo some of the pain. Connection is that powerful. It's because we learn to feel in social and relational contexts, so we can learn to feel a new way when we're in a new social relational context. And what most of us don't really know, too, is that feeling with someone, a connected, safe, attuned other, it can make what would normally be kind of laborious and maybe meandering feel really clear and productive in a way that we're not just sitting in it forever. I'm Hillary McBride. Other People's Problems is produced by Jody Martinson, mixed by Will Howie. TK Matunda is our associate producer. Tanya Springer is our senior producer. RF Nirani is the executive producer of CBC Podcasts.
For more CBC Podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.